Welcome to the Beef Roundtable. I'm Dr. Ron Lemonade, your Beef Extension Specialist here at Purdue University, West Lafayette, Indiana. And I'll be working with my co-host, Bert Rutherford.
And I'm Bert Rutherford, Senior Editor of Beef Magazine, and I work out of Denver, Colorado. Each month on the Beef Roundtable, we discuss current topics with several guests who are experts in those fields. And these topics really concern all beef producers. I think we have a really good program coming up this time.
The Beef Roundtable is recorded live and edited to fit the time constraints of the program. The programs are available at the Beef Magazine website, iTunes, YouTube.com, as well as www.beefroundtable.com.
Our topic for today's Beef Roundtable is to look back at the devastating wildfires that scorched much of the Great Plains region in last March. Those fires took well over a million, maybe almost 2 million acres of ranch land. This is the third in the third three-part series where we use those wildfires as a discussion starter. And in this edition, we're going to continue that conversation about how ranchers who are affected by the wildfires or any natural disaster can recover not only financially, but emotionally at all. And in this edition, we will further explore both of those issues.
Our first guest today is Jess Wall with Plains Land Bank in Perryton, Texas. In addition to being an ag lender, Jess is also a rancher. And part of his ranch was burned in the wildfires this past March. So Jess can speak to us from both sides of this fence. Jess will be able to update us on how ranchers can recover financially from not just the recent wildfires, but what they need to plan for should they have any other natural disaster that might impact their operation.
And we are joined by Dr. James Jordan. Dr. Jordan is a psychiatrist and past medical director of the Ham Psychiatric Clinic in St. Paul, Minnesota, a position he held for 25 years. He was the president of the Minnesota Psychiatric Association, Society in 2010, and is the psychiatry representative to the Minnesota State Advisory Committee Council on Mental Health. He is also on the board of directors of the Twin Cities Medical Society Foundation. And as if that weren't enough, he is co-producer and co-host with Mary Hansen of two shows, one, Understanding Depression, Hope Through Treatment, and another, Understanding Depression, The Suicide Connection.
Gentlemen, let's get started. Jess, let me start with you. And, you know, how are the customers that you deal with down in the Southern Plains, how are they responding and recovering from the recent wildfires? And we'll start there.
Well, it took a few weeks for folks to start coming in. We'd already been out and visited with some of our producers that had fires that came across them. And with them coming in, we've talked about the long-term effect. What can you do to get your fences back up, pay for the cattle that you've lost, also clean up that ground? And we just helped them make connections with area people that could build fences, several folks that weren't fence builders but had helped their dads. Well, they came kind of out of woodwork and started helping build fence, along with numerous other people all across the country. So more or less, we just started talking about the different things and ways that they could gain their financial ability to repay over time. Many different banks offer some interest-free money for a short term. Not all banks did, but some did. And just start working their way through it. It's going to be a long process, especially those that lost their entire farms or ranches in particular, and including houses and buildings. In there, you know, it's now been 5 months since those fires took place. And so still a lot of us, a little bit of shock, a little bit of grief of, do I want to do it? And each person's, you've got to kind of work through with each one differently. If they're a young producer, how can you do it over the next 30 years? If they're an older producer, you know, is this what you want to continue doing, or is it best to just get it back up in shape and find somebody else to farm or ranch in there? So again, it's back to the same old adage in the sense that each one of us has to deal with it in a different way. And it kind of depends on what your relationship is with your banker as to how much input that banker is going to have.
You know, Jess, it would seem to me that this would be an occasion where being pretty tight with your banker would be a real advantage, I think.
Absolutely. You know, if you've not built that relationship, it just takes time to know what your wishes and dreams are. And so if your banker doesn't have a clue, you're going to waste some time. So even when you don't think you need a financial need, it's important to come in and just say, hey, I'm still on track. What's your thought? Is this what you would do, or who can I talk to on trying to, drill another water well, or should I cross fence my pastures? What's the best way to make this work? And so, yes, you need that relationship with that banker, but many bankers that especially are born and raised in that area, they already know most of those producers, and it helps out.
Jess, what recommendation would you have for a producer following a devastating event? Okay, and we use the wildfires, but, you know, there's been blizzards and there's been a whole host of other natural disasters that have impacted our producers in various parts of the country at various times. And virtually every year, we probably have got somebody that's impacted by something, okay? Maybe not as big as the wildfires that we had in March, but nevertheless, as an individual producer. So what recommendation would you have for a producer that's gone through this in terms of what do I need to bring to you, okay? How do I need to prepare for that visit with my banker?
Well, one thing I think in particular, and most bankers probably won't agree with this, but being a producer, I've learned this, is don't ever give up everything you got to that banker. Because at some point in there, something like this is going to happen. You know, 2 months before these wildfires, we had a tremendous ice storm that came across our particular area and tore down power lines and just devastated trees on top of having the wildfire right after that. And of course, we've had hail storms, we've had a snowstorm. I mean, it just seems like they keep coming. But if you as a producer can build that equity some way, whether you're a landowner or whether you are a renter of land, and you know, maybe, you know, if you're a landowner, if other than your homestead, which in Texas we have homestead laws, and maybe have a quarter or half section that nobody has a lien on. And whenever these catastrophes happen, you have that drawback. Sometimes you get one catastrophe after the other and you're just kind of decreed. But still, just always have a backup plan. I had my kids, you know, going to college. I had them make sure they always had one checking account that they never touched, that they had cash in. I mean, you just always have a backup plan for that banker. But at the same time, you need to be trying to encourage your accountant to be doing their income tax on a regular basis. It's really tough for a banker whenever you need his 2016 income tax and he's filed for an extension, and even though he's done it every year, and you're not going to have that information until October. And so that delays you trying to get the information that you need to work as quickly as possible to get the funds they need to get back on track to, you know, the longer it takes you to get a loan, the further behind you are. Somebody else got that fence builder to go ahead and start because he can get paid from him and you don't have your money set up. So I think you just need to be proactive, trying to get everything in front of you as quickly as you can so you are prepared. I mean, we never want, you know, a disaster to occur. But we all know in the farming and ranching industry, it's going to happen. We just don't know when.
Dr. Jordan, just listening to this discussion, Jess talking about still, even this long after the fires are out, still some shock, still some grief, and then you heap all that financial stress on top of that. In your experience, what tips do you have for people to cope with that? Who might be affected by a natural disaster?
Well, let me begin just by saying something both professional and personal. I became very interested in this personally because one member of my family is a 9/11 survivor, was in the second tower of the World Trade Center. And so I personally came in contact with a disaster. And my family and myself and my friends and so forth helped us, each other, get through that. Professionally, though, to your question of tips, the sense of community and the sense of connection with, in this case, as Jess was pointing out, with knowing your banker knowing you, this is a matter of establishing trust. And for a psychiatrist, for mental health professionals, spending time with important people in your life and significant people like your banker, like your clergyman, with your family and so forth, putting the time in building this trust so that you can have open communication and connection during times like this is critical. The idea of looking at your day-to-day life. Now, it's months since this has occurred, but as you point out, there's sequelae that occur, both physical and emotional, and having to do with judgment and the kinds of things that we all depend on to get us from day to day, week to week. We need each other to pay attention to these various factors and point them out. And so, I would start by talking about the families that are close to, immediately involved in the disaster, and then the extended family, friends, bankers, and so forth. There needs to be connection, opportunities to meet and talk things over and establish this sort of basis of trust, communication, so that we can understand and observe how each and every member of the extended family and the family themselves are doing. The period of recovery is months. A normal grief reaction or a period of time that is somewhat empirical, but approximately a year in the period of post-traumatic stress for in a normative setting would take just about that time to sort of become more functional, more operational, and emotionally be outside of a realm of being symptomatic or having some something that you know is troublesome for each of us each day. So that's a beginning discussion of what I guess I'd say some basic hygiene things. I know for my family and myself today, there are really two types of trauma here. One is shock trauma, the shock of the event and the days, the numbness, the difficulty with talking about anything that has to do with the issues, how you're going to function, the concern and, about the safety of others that have been hurt or directly involved. All these kinds of things need to be worked out in those first weeks. And then certainly looking for professional support and We can talk about that a little later, about the various groups in terms of vulnerabilities and what kinds of things we're looking for in terms of those that need more attention, possibly even professional help as things unfold over these months.
Well, yeah, Dr. Jordan, you kind of talk about the families and you know, and the fact that, you know, there's an emotional investment in a natural disaster by not only the individual that might be the primary owner or the primary impact, okay, in the case of the 9/11 example that you gave, you know, that the individual, but how does a family member or that inner circle, if you will, of people that you've developed this relationship with, what signs of depression or PTSD, you know, should we be looking for in those individuals that have been impacted?
Well, one of the things that the windows into the family, of course, I noticed in our roundtable here, they're all men in this group. And one of the people, that group, that gender that has their finger on the pulse of the family and the emotional life of the family is the woman in the house, the wife, the significant other. And the other window, and a very, very important one, is the children. They are very, very attuned, and they have not developed, as those of us sitting around this table this morning, the kinds of self-reliant defenses and independence and all the kinds of things that we are very proud of and responsible for in terms of our character development. But those that are looking after the children and also have an orientation to the emotional nuances of life, of people and so forth. So those conversations, that attention, paying attention to the children, to one's spouse or significant other, and having a sense of what is their reading on things day to day, really listening carefully to them, having times to sit down, turn off those devices, sit around the table and have dinner in the evening, get together and listen to the children and listen to the women who can tell you in a very, very specific way what you need to be paying attention to, along with all the responsibilities that people like you and Jess are dealing with and so forth, for fixing the fences, getting some income back on in the bank, taking care of the future, having a secondary plan, all the things that he mentioned. Those are all the practical steps, but I think an emotionally practical step. And I can't say this or underline it more than pointing out how critical it is to have the family and all those voices heard. The time spent there, if that was done, they would really kind of put a real dent in my business. I tell you, if families were doing more of this, spending more time together. And at times like this, I know in my family, when we had this situation with my third daughter, we came together and I thought we had a very, very close open discussion about many things, but we really came together in a very, very more and much more practical, important way around her well-being and how she was doing over time. And it took, I would say, about a year or more of these, our regular attention to getting together in this way.
Let me just ask another question. And, you know, being in agriculture all of my life, you know, and observing producers and, you know, we're a very independent group. You know, we want to project ourselves as being strong and, you know, we're the, you know, from the guy's perspective. And, you know, in a case of a devastation like this, you know, I would think that it would be real easy for the men, okay, that are part of these operations, that are owners, that are having to make decisions, et cetera, don't want to show any vulnerability. And, you know, so as a family, as the spouse, as the children are reacting to how dad or grandpa or uncle or whatever might be facing this, they may see some symptoms or some signs that the individual man, in some cases, doesn't see. How do you get through to this guy? Okay? I mean, I could envision that, you know, how I would react to that kind of devastation, and fortunately I've not had to go through it. But how do you work with the person that basically is denying that I've got a problem?
Well, denial is a very long river. It truly is. And it, what I mean by that is that it really has a history to it. And a situation like this where, as you point out, the male classic defenses and character feature is self-reliance. I mean, we are get up each morning and think of ourselves and center around that particular dimension of our behavior. The way that you can approach this is that showing vulnerability, and the family can listen and help and support the dad in this case, or the brother, the uncle, and particularly noting the, as you point out, there will be conceivably signs or symptoms of things to watch out for when someone is somewhat withdrawn or not talking as much. They have a sleep disturbance. They look like they're drinking more than usual to deal with, you know, how they're feeling and give them a chance to sort of strengthen themselves. The forgetfulness, different dimensions of their cognitive functions, their emotional functions change. And I think the family really needs to pay attention to this and then seek really support. I think when, as you point out, this is such a classic issue that this is a time when possibly a friend of the family, an extended family member can really help someone who's trusted to sit down and talk with the family about communication, because this is often a challenge to really get over this particular dimension of how someone is really not at all prepared to enter into these kinds of self-disclosure, emotional expression of how they actually feel. So the clergyman, sometimes a visit with parents going to see the family doctor and talking about how this is going, how they're handling things. These are sort of hygiene visits, preventive medicine visits, rather than letting it something that you notice go unattended to. So those early signs of change in someone's behavior, patterns, and so forth. And then last but not least, if someone has a history of a mental illness and they're being treated or they haven't treated in the past, this is someone that has a specific vulnerability to a disastrous event or that kind of shock trauma. And they really, I think, should have a consultation. There may very well be seeing someone on a regular basis, but this is something that one should attend to because they're especially vulnerable. The 40 to 60 year old male, as you point to in your question, that's the group that we really want to pay attention to because they're uniquely in that self-reliant, responsible, accountable position and not that far from impulsivity or doing something that might truly be harmful or even dangerous. And so paying attention, I think, to these signs and symptoms when they are there and evident within the family is something to notice and act on rather than wait for it to become more of a problem.
Jess, let me follow up with a little bit of a twist to this, okay? What happens when the producer comes in and kind of denies that, hey, you know, I've got a financial problem. You know, I mean, my hope and aspiration is that the ranch is going to be back or the farm is going to be back or the business is going to be back to normal in a very short period of time and really doesn't accept the fact that, hey, you know, I was leveraged really hard before this and now I've got this disaster that puts me in an even more vulnerable position. How do you deal with that? And what recommendations do you have, you know, to people coming in that might have been highly leveraged prior to this event?
I think the most important part is you just don't start right in the middle of it. You know, if you start accusing people that, you know, you're in bad financial shape, well, it breaks their heart. And they're back, as Dr. Jordan's talking about, that they now have come in. So maybe you have to back up to how are your kids dealing with it? How are some other directions? And work your way back into that conversation. And then at some point in there, you have to come up with a plan. And you can't dictate the plan. You just have to direct them in a direction. And that may be that, have you ever thought about selling part of the farm? Someday you can maybe buy it, buy some more back. But maybe right now, maybe we need to do that. And then maybe even quickly change the subject, let that soak in a little bit, and try to, have you talked to your operational lender? Have you considered using the federal government, some of their funds that are available? And then maybe work your way back in. Well, I tell you what, just as a producer myself, if somebody comes directly at me, you know, just look at me right in the eye and say, you know, I'm wrong or I've done something wrong. Of course, I throw up my hands and kind of defend myself. And so, again, just throw out some ideas. And then just as we probably will here, when we get to the end of the conversation, let's kind of pull out a piece of paper and let's kind of write down some things and put some directions we ought to look at. And let's set another time. Next week when you're back in town, well, in the meantime, I'll do some research and you do a little research and let's come up with a plan. And I think it just release, take some of that tension off instead of that pointing that finger and saying, you're in bad shape. You were to start with, I told you that. And you're up the creek. Now, you know, when are we having the farm sale? And that just destroys you emotionally, I think, in there. And so just give them some options and a little homework. Well, we don't want too much homework because we're awful busy anyway trying to work our way out of that disaster, whether it's a snowstorm or ice storm or fire. And so try to help them realize that they have a problem, but at the same time, help them come up with a solution.
Can I ask Jess a question? In the context of that conversation, let's say one of these men who really is built on a view of being strong and not showing emotion, you start to see in that conversation some sadness, or he pauses or doesn't really look like he's able to kind of even set up a short-term plan. But really, you start to see some emotion well up. And this is sort of on-the-job psychiatry here. But what would you, how would you handle that? You know, and say that I'm the person that I want to follow your good advice. I think it's very important, as you say, to have, let's meet again. And definitely pick this up where we left off. But during that time that you start to see an opening, what would you say, or how would you, how would you handle it?
Well, and again, we have to all deal with different people different ways. You can't cookie cut it in there. But for some of them, maybe it's a little bit of, let's go to lunch. Or maybe it's, do you mind if I'm a man of prayer and let's spend a little time. Let's ask for higher guidance in there. And, you know, just again, don't point the finger. I guess I keep coming back to that because we all come up with circumstances that we're out of control. And, we just don't like having that finger pointed at it. So at the same time, maybe even include someone else. If you got somebody else in your office that, you know, I have a wonderful lady that I work with that she has a different perspective, kind of like what you were talking about earlier in there. Sometimes you need somebody that maybe they're not even involved in agriculture. Maybe that's our first concern. Our first concern is for his health. Let's make sure that he's not doing something to hurt himself in there. And then we'll work on those financial problems. Give him a little bit of time in there. But I keep coming back to the same thing. Follow through. I mean, if that means a phone call the next day and said, man, I really enjoyed having having a visit in my office yesterday. And, how are you doing today? And start, making sure that he's okay mentally as he starts to make decisions for his operation, financial operation. If he's not well mentally and able to shoulder that other responsibility, it sure makes a big old burden on him.
As you say that, it reminds me of something I learned early on. I had my training in medicine before I converted to psychiatry at the Mayo Clinic. One of the things I learned actually in the medicine section in that part of my training was that you really have to metabolize a relationship with someone that you're interviewing, that you're talking to, in the case of a doctor that you're taking care of or examining. And that really is what empathy is about. Empathy means that exactly as you said, that you spend that time, you take that person in, you have a degree of faith. I mean, faith in the formal sense, religious faith, but you also have faith in the context of your understanding the human condition, how much we need each other. These kinds of events in the most dramatic way point out how absolutely attached we are to each other. Without each other, we will not survive. We are very social. Now, Americans kind of go against this to some degree. We like to think of ourselves as very self-reliant. So it's a sort of a cultural thing here. And men kind of take it to the nth degree. But as you said, if you continue to meet, you get to know this person and know them at an emotional level, along with their problems, but know about them in detail. That builds up your sense of being empathic with them, not sympathetic. Sympathy is a good thing, but empathy is really what really ties us together. We have a real reading of a person, know them, and we can conjure up inside of us a memory of them, the people that we grew up with and so forth, how vital and detailed those memories are. That empathic resonance is part of that attachment. So, as you said, continuity, listening, being open, and then bringing others in, not leaving the person isolated, and certainly, absolutely not getting isolated. I mean, one of the worst things a psychiatrist can do is practice alone. You have to have consultation and supervision over the time of your career. Otherwise, the burdens are too much for any of us. So, absolutely, that connection and the continuity, follow-up.
Gentlemen, let's maybe take this with a little longer-term perspective. Jess, you know this very well, but even when everything is going right on a farm or a ranch, it's still pretty stressful. And just because you're dealing with so many things that you don't have a lot of control over. So looking long-term, you get through the disaster, you kind of get things back where you're happy where they're at and they're going. How do you continue that ability to handle just the day-to-day stress that comes with being a farmer or a rancher?
Probably don't practice what I preach, but at the same time, you got to get away a little bit. You got to go see what the other side of the world is like. And you come back with vigor, I think, whenever you come back, even if it's just a weekend to go to the city. And while you're going there, if you have that wonderful spouse, well, you can discuss as you're driving back and forth either about the kiddos or else about the farm. And you're seeing it from a different perspective. And so I think getting away sometimes is a good thing, even though we all have a long list and it seems like none of us can ever, 24 hours just isn't enough in a day as a farmer or rancher. But still, we've just got to make time to do that. At the same time, as far as it's just important as a farmer and rancher to sit down, not just by yourself works well, but include your spouse or even the farmhand. You know, what do you see long range? 3 years from now, where are we going to be at? And, you know, are we going to change this operation or do we just continue to do the same thing over and over and just try to generate income and make sure that we pay off the debt that we have and build some equity? So I think a lot of the long range, everything's going well. And at the same time, prepare, as I was saying earlier, prepare for that disaster. Not that we want that disaster to show up, but in and when it does happen, whether it's, you know, I think if we've had some floods on this creek that we live on and has just wiped out not only fences, but also houses and things like that. Well, you've got to be prepared for that, either from your insurance portion or else the equipment to be able to clean up those items. So again, already have whatever disaster might come your way, just to be, have talked through them before they occur.
And Jess, I just want to reiterate one point that I thought was kind of important and relevant, and that is, you know, you mentioned talking through this plan with maybe the farmhands, you know, and other family members, okay? This doesn't have to be just the principal owner or the patriarch of the operation. You know, this is a time to, you know, allow other input into that strategy of how we're going to move forward and maybe reinvent ourselves as an operation. You know, so, you know, maybe we've always done commercial. Maybe this is the time to go to purebred. Maybe we've been purebred. Maybe it's time to go to commercial. Maybe we ought to go to stockers. Maybe we ought to, but look at a lot of the alternatives. Okay, you know, if it happens to be a row crop operation, maybe it's other row crops that, or other cash crops that I could consider because of the new hand that I've been dealt. And I think that was kind of an important part, and I just kind of wanted to reiterate that because I think that's a key piece. Dr. Jordan, anything to add to that?
You know, I was thinking about something I think important for all of us to pay attention to when we decide that something is concerning enough that we need to seek some professional help, how to proceed. And there really are some steps here that I think are critical in terms of timing and moving towards something that's going to be responsive. When you have concerns about someone's behavior change, because often there's a behavior change in them that's remarkable and noticed by others, when their daily function is disrupted and they cannot sleep, eat, take care of things that you would ordinarily expect them to do, they are more and more isolated or quiet, maybe even talk about despair and a very dark outlook on things. I think getting to a health professional, a family doctor, or a licensed mental health professional is a very, very important step, and particularly in this group of men who are conceivably quickly able to get lethal in a sense of their despair and taking some action on it, feeling very responsible, as we've been talking about that, as the breadwinner and the person to solve the problems, so that this open and bringing others in is critical for them to become part of the solution and not the leader, not the one responsible for things. And then when that evaluation occurs, there is going to be a need for discussion, professional conversation and consultation, and also possibly the need for some medication, depending on the nature of the symptoms. Those things go together. I suggest that medication without consultation and without therapy is really something that you're sort of a half a loaf if you have one or the other, in the sense that possibly medication is necessary to stabilize and help someone, but also they need to be talking professionally and then with the support of the family. So I just want to bring that out, not to overlook that, because I think that's one of the things that is so important to prevent tragedy and the risk of suicide. And last but not least, in this part of the world, and we have it here, of course, in the Midwest and on the East Coast, too, is the potential for lethality. So the idea of a mix of drinking or drug abuse and then lethality, the access to firearms and so forth, all of this needs to be carefully assessed in terms of risk in protecting someone who develops more of a clinical state and that needs professional help. So I just want to make sure that that's said, and that you're willing to get resources to support and help you when that comes up.
Jess, earlier you mentioned, I'm kind of going back here a bit, but earlier you mentioned that some banks in your area had developed some no-interest short-term loans, and then there's some federal programs. In the immediate aftermath of a natural disaster, you know, typically the federal government steps in with various kinds of different aid help. What are some of those programs, and where can they where can a producer go to access those?
Most of the programs that they came up with, the time has elapsed as far as being able to apply for. And so that's kind of a disheartening, but at the same time, you know, and it's the same way with, as far as I know, with the bank. Most of them were some forgiven interest for the first 6 months. So that time is left. But now you're just going to have to go back to your banker, the area banker, and try to come up with a plan. Of course, you still have FSA being able to help you out in the long term, as far as maybe a guarantee. And of course, they do have some other funds that are available. But as far as for the disaster, because of the fires in our area, most of that has lapsed. Most folks, we understand that they're having problems, and most bankers will really work with you on a little bit of interest, or even more importantly, let's defer that payment. We have a program ourselves where that we can defer that first 6 months, just interest only, and then stretch it back out over time. So again, each bank has different operations, and you just have to sit down with your banker and come up with a plan.
Well, gentlemen, go ahead,
Ron.
Go ahead.
No, that's fine. Because I was going to do the same thing. Gentlemen, are there any other thoughts, any other points, anything that we haven't discussed that in your experience you think are important for folks to know?
Well, can I make a plug here for this project that I've been working on, and my colleagues and I have helped me immensely. We've have a website, understandingdepression.org, and briefly in that is a series of interviews with individuals at various stages of their life who have encountered stress, trauma, loss, and just life passing. One of the interviewers was an executive who was told that this was the day he was going to retire. it wasn't in his plan to hear that day, but he heard it and then had to deal with the consequences of it. So listening to others, I think, is a very, very important thing. You can get that at understandingdepression.org, both in English and Spanish. We've recently translated into Spanish for the Latino community. And the other video is going a little deeper into the relationship between depression and suicide. So there's so much more to say on the clinical side of this, but back to what Jess's point is, and it made such a wonderfully crystal clear piece of advice for all of us, is make that connection, bring others in, continuity, follow up, and then be prepared when someone emotionally opens up to take that in also. That's very, very critical information to know about them and accept that. And anxiety and depression, and there's a concept, if I can say it very briefly, is that for psychiatrists to develop a capacity for a depressive position. In other words, you are able to grasp a certain amount of true emotion, anxiety, sadness, life as it really is in transparency, and be able to carry that and work with it with people so that they can broaden themselves, widen their skin, and have openness to the emotions within them and their children, their spouse, their significant other, and their colleagues, and those that can help them. That emotional attunement or empathy is a very, very important tool that all of us have to practice and work with, not just psychiatrists, all of us. And these days, with all the things that we're facing, you know, we're 5 minutes away from a disaster in the most unpredictable ways, unfortunately. Terrorism, natural disasters, and everything in between. So no one's immune to this. We need to pay attention to it, and I think we can learn a lot. And this is an opportunity, along with a very, very big challenge, to really stay connected and really help each other. We are social creatures, and no question about it. Ask Jess. He'll tell you that he's got his practice going there, both on a very personal level and professional. So he's got a very nice balance of the two. And that comes through in his discussion of how he works with his clients, his neighbors. So thank you very much. I appreciate an opportunity to participate, and wish everyone the best.
Dr. Jordan, I agree with the things that you've said. It's kind of like sometimes we need to hear those items again, and the wisdom that you have, it really does come out. I reiterate again, it's so important to open the door and have that communication and visit with people and listen to them and understand what they're going through, because we're all going through different things at different times in our lives, and it may not even be a time of catastrophe. It may just be a time of life in there, and it's nice to understand the steps that you've talked about, and I appreciate you saying those.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for being our guest today. That about wraps up this edition of the Beef Roundtable. Join us next month for another look at the issues and trends that affect you.